Good morning, folks. Hope you are having a great Tuesday morning. Man, it rained hard last night. I mean, it was absolutely incredible. But I guess we continue to need it, and it's a lot of folks I'm talking to are saying that we definitely needed it. So maybe it's a good thing, and it looks like the rest of the week is going to be clear. So that'll be nice. We can get some grass cut, maybe. Got a great show lined up for you today. At 12:30, we'll visit with Emily Stack, Executive Director of Moms for America Action. We'll talk about vaping in the United States. We'll talk about the vapes that are being sold here. Are they legal? Are they not? How are they marketing them? And why are they directly marketing to kids? And we'll talk about that in enforcement and where we see this going. At the top of the 12 o'clock hour, we'll visit with Dr. Larissa Littleton-Stibe, Chancellor of Delgado Community College, and Jennifer Hernandez, the Dean of Nursing. You're going to be really blown away by the numbers here of how important Delgado is to staffing the delivery of health care throughout the region. We'll talk about salaries. We'll talk about placement. We'll talk about the passing of the testing coming out of their nursing programs and other issues as well. Excuse me. At 11:30, Greg Reggio, old friend, he is helping with a number of other volunteers with the Oyster Crawl. You will recall that the Oyster Crawl is about saving the coast. All of those oyster shells are collected up and utilized in coastal restoration, and that will go on Thursday night. We'll get all the particulars. They have a boatload of restaurants that are participating. If you are an oyster fan, like I am, Thursday night is the night for you. Get ready. At the top of the hour and 11 o'clock, we'll talk to Kia Sherman with Entergy, the new Vice President of Economic Development and Customer Service for Entergy New Orleans. Ms. Kia will talk about their vision for the 510 Economic Corridor, and we'll talk about those issues and actually as well the hardening of the grid and a bunch of other things that they are involved in with a serious contribution and investment in a whole lot of things as well. Dr. Skip Gallagher, UNO professor and NOPD watchdog, we'll continue to talk to Skip. We've been talking to Skip about this overtime issue and other lack of governance issues that have existed within the construct of the NOPD for a long time. And nothing new. We knew that there was going to be byproducts of this lack of supervision, and it reveals itself in so many different ways, much of which came out during the consent decree investigation. Now we're finding out that we have a problem with overtime. We have significant abuses. In my view, a lot of this rises to the level of payroll fraud. A lot of people don't like to call it that, but that's what it is in many respects. Not all, but in many respects, payroll fraud. And, you know, speed of the lead is speed of the pack. If you have supervisors that are engaging in that kind of conduct, what do you expect from everybody else? I don't hear a lot of people talking about this. It's kind of interesting as to how this works, as though because we have shortages that we're willing to look the other way. No. This is when you look harder, right? When the chips are down, when the systems are distressed, when governance is distressed. You want people that are going to step up and do the right thing every day. Not just when there is aggressive supervision. Those aren't the kind of officers we need. We've heard the chief talk about not lowering standards. Well, at some point in time, some people have proven to others that they succumb to the temptation of being able to take advantage of the system and beating the system, right? And not following the rules. Which leads me to today's monologue. And every time I do these monologues on this particular topic, it pains me. Because I am a member of the Catholic community, and it just really, and a former member of law enforcement, knowing how these investigations take place, knowing that there are countless numbers, dozens upon dozens upon dozens, of sexual assault cases that are conducted by law enforcement each and every year, and nobody ever finds out about the ones that are unfounded. So again, I'm having trouble with why the Catholic Church can't even follow their own rules now. Pope Francis laid all of this out. Everybody was very excited about the fact that there was the creation of an obligatory response and reporting that had to be given to allegations that were made by either whistleblowers or others coming forward alleging improper behavior by priests. But it doesn't seem to be sinking in. It's absolutely a miracle. Allegedly, a parishioner up in Baton Rouge came forward and notified the powers to be, and in this case, Bishop Michael Duca, about a priest up there and reaching out to an adult parishioner, allegedly making advances on that adult, talking about the type of sexual behavior that he engages in, and during the course of multiple conversations revealed to the parishioner that he also, in very descriptive terms, had abused young kids. Well, this parishioner went forward and provided the information to the powers to be in the Baton Rouge Archdiocese. Well, that should have triggered a whole bunch of things under the edicts that were set down, or if you want to call it canonical law, whatever, by Pope Francis, which are related to as Vos Estis Lux Mundi. It was adopted in 2021, procedural norms that needed to take place relative to investigating bishops and the like. All of this was reported by The Pillar, as well as WBRZ up in Baton Rouge, television station up in Baton Rouge. So the allegation goes that Bishop Michael Duca discouraged the whistleblower from calling the police. Really? Why? Why would you do that? What do you have to hide? He knew that this local priest allegedly had admitted to this parishioner sexual contact with minors. Of course, the priest denies the allegation, right? That's not out of the ordinary. But what we find is that none of the reporting systems set up by Pope Francis, a lot of it was not adhered to. There were very strict timelines, like 30 days for this to happen and so many days for that to happen. And it wasn't until more and more people started asking about what was going on and that they all realized that this was being handled in a way contrary to Vos Estis Lux Mundi, the 2021 procedural norms published by Pope Francis. And basically what this was, is the theme of it was to proceed without delay. One of the parishioners, Luke Zumo, a Baton Rouge Catholic, is the one that brought this information forward. And he filed a report in mid-February and was informed in late April by the officials of the Archdiocese of New Orleans that they had not received instructions on how to proceed with the case. Soon after a report that was done, where a lot of this was publicly released and talked about from The Pillar, and you can go check their publication out, pillarcatholic.com. on the Vatican's delayed action, Zumo was told by Archbishop Cecchio had been authorized, was told that Archbishop Cecchio had been authorized to conduct an investigation. The Vos Estis investigation, which is part of this obligatory reporting and review. Zumo told the Pillar that Cecchio was told that he should complete the investigation within 50 days and send a report no later than 15 days after that. The Archdiocese has not responded to requests for additional information, although questions have been asked by multiple media outlets, and there's been no response. So the situation actually began in September 2025, when this adult Catholic male in the Baton Rouge Diocese alleges that Father Charbel Jamhouri, a Lebanese Maronite priest, who is then the pastor, yes, the pastor of St. Isidore the Farmer Parish in Baker, Louisiana, that he had attempted to coerce him into a sexual relationship, reportedly holding the man's hand, recounting a history of his own sexual activity, touching the man's lips, kissing his fingers, urging the man to massage him, and proposing sexual contact. The parishioner alleges at the same time Jamhouri disclosed to him prior possible acts of child sexual abuse, specifically oral sex, alleging recounting his preference for such activity in graphic detail. Jamhouri ultimately ends up telling the Pillar that he did not attempt this. He did not recount to the man the history of oral sex with minors. Instead, the priest said that the man was abusing him, though he declined to elaborate on the nature of that abuse, and they have not been able to determine whether or not there was any report filed by Father Jamhouri outlining allegations about this particular parishioner. Now, the diocesan officials had reportedly conducted a preliminary investigation. The priest, though, was not removed from office. The Diocesan Review Board was not contacted, nor was the Diocesan Safeguarding Office. So all of the provisions that the Catholic Church has bragged about, talked about, put into place as a result of the reforms under Pope Francis were violated, allegedly. Now, the diocese did send Jamhouri for psychological evaluation, and in February removed him from his role as pastor, and Zumo's report alleges that the process undertaken in the case did not confirm to the diocesan safe and did not conform, excuse me, to the diocesan safe environment policies, and that it was wrong for Duca to discourage him from contacting the police. You think? He further argues that diocesan statements on the matter conceal the fact that the priest allegedly admitted to sexual contact with minors. In fact, went so far as to say that they didn't put any of this, a lot of this, in the report. It's as though the allegation never happened. He was upset, and rightfully so, because minors are at risk if this is an allegation. And they kept the families in the dark. It looks like they never did try to find out with any sufficient detail as to what kids he was talking about. What assignment was he at? Was it while he was there at St. Isidore the Farmer Parish in Baker, Louisiana? No one seems to know. For its part, the Diocese of Baton Rouge ends up telling the Pillar by email that in response to the report of the serious boundary violations, after extensive conversation with all the parties involved and an investigation which also included, finally, interviews by law enforcement, the diocesan investigation, and the full health the health assessment of Father Jamhori, Bishop Duca determined that Father Jamhori be removed from his office as pastor of St. Isidore, effective immediately. This actually ended up being accomplished in early February. The diocese did not respond to follow-up questions from any of these individuals. You will recall that one of the allegations was that Bishop Michael Duca allegedly discouraged the whistleblower from calling the police after the local priest allegedly admitted to sexual contact with minors. Obviously, once police got involved and interviews were had, and they started going down this trail, all of this stuff seems to have revealed itself, and which obviously caused the immediate action to be taken by the bishop. But what about the bishop's actions? This is not anything new. I've had several opportunities to interview the previous archbishop and simply ask, why not call law enforcement? This silly notion of this conflict between canonical law and the criminal law of the state of Louisiana is just that. Silly. And continuing forward, we're trying to square up the two. Meanwhile, our kids, your kids, being put at risk, albeit a small minority of sexual predators disguising as priests, is still existing. And the confidence and the trust that we should have in our respective parishes, our respective archdioceses, our respective Catholic leaders, we should not be knee-knocking on this issue. We should not be nervous on this issue. What we should be is confident that the leaders in this church community are going to do the right thing. That they will adhere to the time period set out, that they will not discourage people from going to law enforcement. In fact, to the contrary, they should be encouraging people to go to law enforcement. This silly practice of trying to protect the appearances of the Catholic Church at the expense of children has got to end. We should all demand it. It has to end now. It needs to be put to rest once and for all. And the only ones that can do it are the individuals that sit in the governing positions of this organization known as the Catholic Church. How many times do we have to be disappointed? How many times are we compelled to question our faith because of the inconsistencies of this church? How many times do we have to hear things that we know run completely, totally contrary to the manner in which they conduct themselves, otherwise known as hypocrisy? How many times? If you adhere to the edicts of Pope Francis, the immediate vos estis investigation, the immediate adherence to vos estis lux mundi, the 2021 procedural norms, published by Pope Francis on this issue. You might, just might, have a better chance of saving the reputation of the church. But if this continues, I mean, read the room. How much reporting has to be done in almost every major city, every major diocese in this country settling cases for sexual assault of children before we get it? Before we get it. Disappointing, in the very least. I don't know what you call it ultimately. But until we as Catholics stand up and start voicing our opinions on this issue, it's not going to go away. And I know that everyone believes that it won't happen in their parish. Go back and look at the historical list that they were compelled to provide at a point in time during this litigation, and you're going to be surprised as to what parishes this type of behavior actually occurred in. We'll be right back. You know, folks, you just heard me talking about reading the room, and one has to wonder, after all the stories off there, all the information that's been brought forward by Dr. Skip Gallagher and a number of media agencies, to include Fox 8 that just brought up the most recent one, you would think that folks would get it. We're joined by Dr. Skip Gallagher, UNO professor and NOPD watchdog. Doc, welcome to the show.
Morning, Noel. Good to be here again.
You would think they would get it, right?
I think if you go back to basic human nature, we tend to live within our means for whatever budget we have. So if we get a pay raise, we live to a slightly higher standard. We, you know, maybe buy a new car a bit earlier, or buy a slightly larger home, or go out to eat a little more often. And it's human nature. We tend to live to the budget that we have. And if your budget starts creeping up, in this case, I think we see officers that they are living within a fairly large budget. You know, as has been mentioned before, there's over 50 officers who are over $200,000, and I think, what, 9 or so that are over $250,000. They have a pretty large lifestyle, and it's difficult to turn around and say, you know what, I'm going to cut back on my lifestyle. So,
but it's a lot easier to cut back on a lifestyle with a job than without a job.
Well, yes, I think you've hit the nail on that.
Because without a job, you have no lifestyle, right? I mean, there's nothing to moderate. I mean, it's gone. There's nothing to modulate. Yes. It's a zero at that point in time. Well, it should be anyway, right?
Yes. Yeah, and it's such an important point because, look, payroll fraud is against the law. And you're a law enforcement officer breaking the law. I'm uncomfortable with that. I think, as you know, as former law enforcement, you're held to a higher standard. You're not held to the same standards other people are. And this is one of the reasons why we often respect law enforcement, is because they are held to a higher standard. They do a difficult job, and they should be paid well. I have no problem with them being well paid, but in a city like New Orleans, when we start talking about $200,000, $250,000, and importantly, what we have now shown time after time, or Channel 8 has through Rob Krieger's reporting, is that the officers aren't at work when they're supposed to be, and we're picking up the tab for that. That's a real problem when the city is broke.
You've heard me talk about this culture of noncompliance, right? And mm-hmm. and it has permeated the NOPD, in my view, speed of the leader, speed of the pack. Every time we've talked about frontline officers, You will recall that I have said, well, where are the supervisors? If they're actually supervising, people can't be missing from being on patrol for hours on end if the sergeant is actually supervising.
So,
and
yes.
So where are they?
So this brings up a point, and one of the things that recent pieces in Channel 8 and Rob has revealed is that officers have compromised login information for other officers. Now, how that was done, whether it was shared or whether it was taken some time ago, it allows officers who have those login informations for other officers to log into their own timesheet and modify it after the fact. So what I see when I look at records is 3 or 4 days later, say, well, I don't know, today's Monday. Last Saturday, I'd like to go into my pay record. I use someone else's login information. I go into my pay record, and I add, say, 4 hours to Saturday. And I didn't work. And this is very hard to keep track of. One is ADP timesheets are very, very difficult to read. They are difficult to follow, and they have an audit trail, but it's often a series of numbers or codes. Now, it's taken me a considerable period of time to understand them and to follow them and to acquire the codes to know what's happening. But it's very suspect when an officer has 2, 3 days, 4 days later, additional time dumped into their timesheet. And we now know what's happened. Many, and I mean more than 100 officers likely were doing this. They were editing their own timesheet, adding time to their timesheet. So it is one way officers are stealing. There are other ways, but this, and the OIG's paper, I don't know if you saw that, it was about a 9-page letter. It sort of goes into this. It spells this out. Now, they're supposed to come out with a more comprehensive paper detailing this. But one of the things it mentions in this is that officers often weren't within their district or even within the state when they were claiming to be at work. And this, again, makes sense. If, say, you're on vacation in Ohio visiting relatives, you would log in with somebody else's credentials and then just dump time into your ADP timesheet. This is actually pretty tricky to catch. Now, saying that, I have, and I've talked about this for years, it now, with Channel 8 revealing 4 officers not at work when they're supposed to be, and I understand the OPD has now caught several officers on their own. They're starting to look for this. And I think maybe we've turned a corner, I hope.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully. I mean, this thing is based really on an honor system. Most payroll systems are what is called exception-based. They assume if your work period is from 8 to 4, let's just use that to make it simple. It assumes that you're there at 8 a.m. unless there's an exception that's entered into the system. If you're doing biometric backup, it assumes you're there at 8, right? And then when you hit the biometric unit, it records the exact time you're there. And if you don't appear there until 8:20, that's a 20-minute exception. Now, in the software, you can give some latitude. Some companies, they give 5 minutes, some give 8, some give 10. Everybody gives some whatever number difference depending on the culture, the utility of what they're doing, and everything else. And they adjust your pay, your hours, if you're paid per hour, if you're so many minutes late. And that number varies as well. And, you know, in many cases, and all of that goes into the system. And, you know, what happens is when you're checking out at 4 and you're ending up working overtime, it's got to be entered that day. Right. Mm-hmm. And that overtime should be entered by the supervisor. You know, it should be communicated via an email or this or that. If you're going to allow the patrol officer to leave from their assignment duty if they're in a certain beat or area of the district, and you don't want to make them have to come back to the district, there ought to be some way to validate, hey, I'm going 10-7, I'm no longer on duty this period of time. And it gets entered into the system daily. But when you have sergeants doing the same thing, right? When the sergeants are leaving early and they're not there at the end of the shift to do all of this, and they're at home and they're checking out, and I don't know if they're even listening to the radio any longer. I don't know. I mean, you could theoretically do this from home, but, you know, you check out at the time that is in the system, and that's when you start heading home, not 20 minutes in advance of when you're getting off duty, because then you're outside of your district. You're outside of your primary obligations. How does that work? I mean, but if the sergeants and the lieutenants and, God forbid, if the captains are doing this, then why should anybody adhere to the rules? I mean, it's crazy.
The captains and above are essentially salaried.
They're exempt employees. I get it. But you lead by example, right? I mean, you know, and it carries through. That's the difference between leadership and credible leadership, right? You lead by example. You follow the rules. You know, there's not a set of rules for everybody else and a set of rules for you. I mean, it just doesn't work.
Yep. I think it's such a complex web. I could basically sit down and show you a dozen ways to cheat the system. And I'm not doing this because it's some sort of theoretical model that I've developed. I've actually found officers doing this and identified the behaviors. And there's a brand new one I just learned of, that what I'm worried about moving into the future is that officers will find further ways to cheat the system to inflate their compensation, to push those pays up. Because it's going to be pretty difficult for an officer who has a base pay around $80,000, $85,000 to go from $250,000 to $85,000. That's going to be a tough one. That is a big jump or reduction in what you're taking home every year. And I'm worried a number of officers, far too many, again, there's 54, I think, over 200,000. There's very few command staff within that. You would expect, and I mentioned this before in your program, we would expect the very pyramid of the NOPD to be the command staff, the chief, the assistant chiefs, the captains, the majors. We would expect them to be at the top. And the only one that is at the top is the chief herself. So there is some real problems, some endemic issues. I think one of the big ones is going to be this. They've changed login credentials for every officer in the NOPD. It is going to make it much harder for officers now to go in and start dumping time into their timesheet. And this really was a big issue because we could show these officers out of place through GPS data, license plate data, when they claimed to be at work, say, last Saturday. And you wonder how officers average 11 hours a day or don't have any days off for months or even a year. Well, they do. They're just dumping time into the timesheet.
But let's be honest, Doc. Mm-hmm. If you have real supervisors, they know exactly how much overtime everybody's working in a given week. Real supervisors would never have an officer work 363 days of a 365-day year. That would never happen.
Yep.
Real supervisors would not have people working 7 days a week in violation of the policies of the amount of hours that you can work with details, because real supervisors would take it upon themselves to check to see. And then a real supervisor, when they see that the quality of the report that is being kicked out is less than what's typically expected, real supervisors would look into it to see whether or not the officer's working too much. Now, how can I say, why can I say that? At my level, when I was the sheriff, I had an overtime report every month on every unit, every district. I knew how many hours, my commanders were working in details. I knew, I knew how many hours other people were working in details. We had a policy that they had to adhere. There were special situations that came up where I needed to waive the policy for a special event. And I did so, so that the officers would not run afoul of the policy. We sent out an interoffice memorandum, you know, directing the exact time of the waiver of the policy and how many hours you would be able to work. That's what real supervisors do. I don't know what these people are doing. But they're not going to do any of it unless somebody on top of them compels them to do it. And you know, and that's where the rubber meets the road is. And I say this all the time. Everybody wants to be a supervisor, but no one wants to supervise. I mean, it's just that's the way it is. And until there's a culture shift in this organization where you are rewarded to be a good supervisor instead of a cog in the wheel that everybody hates and everybody starts taking shots at you and trying to get you disciplined or fired, none of this is going to change. None of it. Because everybody's going along to get along. And when you're going along to get along, guess what happens to organizations internally? They abuse all of the internal controls. You've been around a long time. You've studied management for a long time. Am I wrong? I don't think so.
No. And I think it's so important. It shows like yours that, that shine the light on this problem, which draw attention to it, which help to correct the problem. I cannot emphasize enough how important that function is. I can sit in a closed room and write a letter, but I guarantee it will be completely ineffective without people like yourself, Rob Krieger, Lee Zurich, who have covered these things, the Times-Picayune and Missy Wilkinson. If people like this don't, like yourself, don't look at this, it's a closed room, and the behavior is going to continue. We have
and look, it pains me. I'm one of them. But, I mean, you know, it's like, guys, ladies, what are we doing? I mean, especially those that are fudging 8 minutes, 10 minutes, 12 minutes, 14 minutes. Why are you doing this? If it means you get dinged, if it means you get dinged 20 minutes of pay, take it on the chin. What are you doing? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And it really doesn't make any sense when you're making over 200 grand a year. I can't explain it. Pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered, and that's exactly what's going to happen here. There are going to be a lot of people going down, and they're not going to like the outcome, I suspect.
I think you're exactly right. It is going to be very uncomfortable for some of these officers to make adjustments. So, and look, I just want the theft to stop. I want them to stop stealing. That's my goal. Nothing else.
And then I love the ones that want to get attack you. You know, I always get these texts. What is this guy trying to do? Well, thank God he's trying to do something, because otherwise, who knows how bad this would be.
I've been followed. I've had a marked car drop somebody off in front of my house to break in. My ex-wife was surrounded by three uniformed officers. I've had repeated phone calls threatening me. I've had cars parked in front of my house for prolonged periods of time. I've been followed.
It's a joke. And these are dangerous people. These are dangerous people. If that's what they're doing, these are dangerous people.
It needs
to stop.
Yes.
I mean, just do the right thing, and you don't have to worry about anything, guys, gals, all of y'all. I mean, it's like, just do the right thing.
Yeah. And the important thing is most officers aren't doing this. Right?
Oh, this thankfully. Thankfully, the vast majority are doing the right thing.
Yes, but we have too many. It's easily more than 100 that are a problem, and they've got to be addressed.
Doc, got to get on to the break. Dr. Skip Gallagher, UNO professor and NOPD watchdog, thank you so much for joining us today. We truly appreciate it. We'll be right back, folks.